Welcome to our podcast, Kuehne+Nagel Shipping Insights, Sea Freight News and Supply Chain Solutions. My name is Sarah Vollmer, and I'm pleased to be your host today. Sea Freight has been a part of me for over 18 years, and I currently serve as Vice President, Sea Freight Go-to-Market Strategy for Kuehne+Nagel in New York. The logistics and supply chain industry has been experiencing exciting times, and we have witnessed heightened global awareness of our industry since the onset of the pandemic in 2020. Our podcasts are aimed at not only providing information, but also offering insights for navigating these exciting times from a group of our experts.
Today's topic, we are tackling sea freight trade insights, uncertainty in the container shipping industry. Wow, that's a mouthful, but I think this is going to be a very interesting topic for our listeners. With me today, my special guest is Paolo Mentrone, Global Head of Trade for Kuehne+Nagel. Paolo, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks, everyone, for listening in.
Absolutely. So it's a pleasure to have you. But before we jump right in, because you know we love to just jump right in and get to these fun topics, would you mind sharing a little bit about your background with our audience?
Sure. As you stated, my name is Paolo Mentrone. I'm Italian born, naturalized American, and I lived for about 20 years in the United States. I'm currently residing in Switzerland. I work out of our Schindellegi headquarters, and I joined Kuehne+Nagel only 32 years ago.
Only, okay.
And in New York, so I'm still a junior. And in various roles, various management roles, I managed regions in Europe, in Asia, in the United States, and stationed in Singapore, in Paris, of course, in New York for several years, and in Hamburg, and now most recently out of Schindellegi, and I live in Zurich with my wife, and my daughter just moved to London in college. So yes, it's been quite interesting 32 years in the organization, and I now run global trades, so I'm responsible for the trade negotiations with carriers, all the contracting in terms of space and pricing with our carrier partners in Europe and around the world.
Okay. Well, you are a true global citizen, that's for sure. So let's talk about these trades. I mean, in the market in general, I mean, wow, what a roller coaster few years it has been here within the industry. Would you mind sharing with us some of the trends that you have seen within the trade industry?
Of course, I think let's put things in perspective. 35 years ago, there were a lot of carriers, but many carriers were regional carrier, niche carrier, national carriers, very much focused on a specific trade, a specific country pair, a specific region pair, providing what we would define today boutique service at a quite high level of quality, I must say, compared to where we are today. We have seen in the last years a major consolidation of carriers. During the financial crisis, there were between 20 to 30 carriers globally, of which probably you could say 15 or 20 were quote-unquote global carriers. We are now at the state of where we have basically eight carriers, of which six quite large, and plus two and three a little smaller, a little more niche carriers, which control roughly 95% of global capacity. So that industry has had a tremendous change in terms of consolidation. So this is, I think, one thing that people and everyone that deals in container shipping has to constantly be reminded. It's we are dealing with basically six to eight carriers, eight entities organized in three very large and powerful alliances. On one hand, these have enabled the carriers to manage the services better, to deploy bigger ships, more efficient, more sustainable vessels in terms of CO2 emissions per TU that we never had before. So that has been quite an amazing advancement in global trade. At the same time, of course, the choice of carriers and choice of alliances is somewhat reduced to what it was many years ago.
Right. I was going to ask you that, right? So I'm thinking I'm putting my shipper hat on right now. So you hear 20 plus to maybe 6 to 8, you know, it's a little slim pickings, as we would say, right? You don't really have that many options. So maybe great from a carrier point of view, but maybe not as advantageous from a shipper point of view.
Look, at the end, if we look at what shippers users of container shipping have been paying for the services over the last 30 years, it has been extremely volatile in all trades. It was volatile when there were a lot of carriers and a lot of competition. It's been volatile all the way up to now because it is, at the end, a supply-demand driven market. We also have to put in perspective that a lot of carriers and the industry did not provide very interesting return on investments for anybody who have invested until the recent, and that's why I tried to put this in perspective with the past, because we are living now since 2 years in a very, very different world when it comes from, in terms of pricing, services, the whole infrastructure is offering. We think too much about the carriers, the vessel, the capacity, and maybe not enough about the overall infrastructure, the port, terminal, rail, including, and let's put our ship, again, also a shipper's hat here, including the ability of shippers, importers, exporters to deal with their side of the logistics, which is the loading of the containers, the delivering to the terminal, the very importantly, the unloading in time of the container, the picking up of the boxes from the port, unload, return the empty container to the terminal. This basically whole end-to-end cycle has a lot of gaps that needs to be worked on and fixed. Digitalization did quite a lot, and we can speak about it later, but clearly there are still a lot of challenges in making sure that this end-to-end cycle is efficient for all parties, because an inefficiency for a carrier will lead to an inefficiency for a 3PL like us, will lead to an inefficiency for a shipper, for a consignee, for the end consumer. So you have to iron out the inefficiencies as a whole in order for everybody to benefit.
Yeah, it's definitely a slippery slope of a topic, right? Of challenges that can happen. And I think, it's interesting. How is this going to be solved? Who can solve it? It's definitely not one person, but, it's going to take quite a few folks here in order to work through some of these challenges, because there's so many different aspects within a supply chain of touch points and where opportunities for things to, maybe go wrong. So it's not an easy thing. I mean, what would be your first reaction is to, if someone asked you, Paolo, well, how do you fix it?
So first of all, I think it's important to understand that what has happened over the last 2 years during the COVID crisis and overall this total different environment we are living in container shipping is very unique, and it has brought container shipping at much higher level of attention everywhere, from the public to the mainstream media and so on and so forth, which has never been in the last 30 years. Container shipping and supply chain powered globalization over the last 30 years, but it was a silent actor.
Right.
I always make fun. Finally, my friends know what I do, and they only know what I do. You see.
I feel the same way. When my 84-year-old father actually understands my job now, it's okay.
Exactly. This is the point. Finally, people called me and said, Paolo, I know you. We were in high school together, and you explained me many times what you do, but finally, I now really get it. I saw what has happened in the Suez Canal, and I see and I hear about inflation, and I see this in the mainstream media when I in the evening and I have dinner and I watch the news, and I can see container ships, and finally I really get it, and I think that this is you asked me why do I start from here. I think that knowing where we stand and understanding the importance that overall, I call it container shipping, but I call it, let's say, a supply chain infrastructure for the world to trade in an efficient manner, it's of everyone's importance. It's important for the single consumer, it's important for governments, it's important for countries. This has the stakeholder are many. The understanding how this is important is a first step. I think that the world has finally discovered that container shipping has been a silent actor, but a very important actor. And now it's broken.
Oh, I like that. A silent actor, but a very important actor. That's a good one.
But the problem is that this silent actor is limping. And that's a problem. And this is something that we need to fix. And there is not silver bullet. It's the realization that something needs to be done at many, many different levels. There's not one party that has a monopoly on the solution. Everybody has to cooperate in order to make it better. And for sure, carriers, maybe you can have been arguably have invested a lot in the ship system, in many cases in other part of the supply chain. These investments have not been replicated. The challenges that, for example, truck drivers have specifically, but not only in the United States or in North America in general, are great. This is something that needs to be taken at heart. We cannot think that there's all category of millions of workers that are working in not really great conditions. At the same time, not having a proper yield out of their profession. And that's why, specifically in the United States, but again, not only, they walked away from the profession, creating a major lack of capacity. So I think that we all have to be sensible as to where the right balance is going to be. And I also think market forces will somehow lead to the right balance, but there are things that can be done. And one of the key things is for everybody that contributes into supply chains to be responsible and understand that this is a way to cooperate together. There is not one single partner. Even a very large carrier or a leading NVO like Kuehne+Nagel can be the one with a single solution, with a silver bullet that can make, they can provide a golden star service and fix all the problems. It is a chain of event to move a box from the origin to a final destination. And each single touch point is under the ownership of different providers, being asset or non-asset based companies, including government agencies for customs clearance, etc. In all these touch points and all these processes, something not only can go wrong, but constantly goes wrong, or it does not go as planned. So the proper flow is never a proper planned flow. There's always something. It's always an exception. Constant exception management, and that's what we need to focus.
There's no perfect shipment. That's for sure.
Not at all.
No, but so you touched on something, and I want to maybe see if you'll expand on it a little bit. You mentioned the word partner, right? And in your opinion, what is the value of partnerships and relationships here within this industry? And how does it affect in terms of the trade and in container shipping?
Look, partnership in business is very often misused.
Okay.
It's a misused word because very often there's a buyer and a seller, can be a product, can be a service.
And there's always the idea that one has to win and the other has to lose. I believe that in order to create a strong partnership, first of all, there must be a good respect of the partners, the organizations that are entering some sort of agreement, a respect of the fact that this business is driven by people. So there are people behind. These are not just machines or balance sheets talking to each other, but there are people, there are emotions, there are people and passions that are driving the result of a business partnership. If both parties enter with full respect, good understanding that this balance, that there must be a balance to be put in place between organizations. I think that's already a good point and a good starting point. And then, of course, it's always having the right balance between what you can get, what you can give, and assuring that you strive for a long-term partnership. You know, a transactional partnership that you say it there's no such thing. And I think that this crisis has proven that long-term partnership, people that had long-term partnership and they really meant it, they had a much, much bigger advantage than who played the market transactionally.
Right. Transactional players. Yeah. I agree with you. Okay. So there are definitely some hot topics also, you know, within the industry today. I mean, we covered, of course, a little bit of the past. We covered congestion, you know, a lot of the things that we've been, as an industry, right, or even as a world, have been struggling with for the past few years. There's one topic that I'd love to get your perspective on, and that's the topic of IMO. I know it's ever evolving and even changing on a weekly basis, but I think our listeners would like to hear kind of your thoughts on it and, you know, where are we at? Where is it going? So especially our shipper listeners out there can start to get prepared.
So first of all, I think it's the good news. Let's start with the good news. The good news is that IMO, governments, and overall there is much more attention to sustainability in shipping than it has ever been. Therefore, I think that we will have in few years to come, but we will have the most sustainable fleet out there. The reduction on CO2 emission per TU will be great compared to what it was just 5 years ago, for example. Therefore, I think that that's a good news. The good news is we are getting our planet greener, maybe not as fast as many would like, me included, but definitely we are on the right path. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of actions towards cleaning up container shipping in terms of CO2 emissions. The new regulations that are not finalized by IMO are going in this direction. And whenever you will have regulation and new ways of deploying capacity and new rules on how, what kind of capacity, what kind of ships, what kind of vessels, what kind of emissions are allowed, etc., this will create some constraints to the asset players, mainly to the carriers, which they will revise their fleet. Some category, some size of vessels will become obsolete faster than maybe foreseen in just few years ago.
Right.
So maybe scrapping will increase, maybe new builds, especially on certain class vessels between probably 1,000 to 4,000 TEUs. Today, the fleet is quite old, and with the new IMO regulation, and again, the regulation is not yet official and fixed, so the there's not clarity exactly how it will impact certain size, but we can envision that specifically a certain older ships and 1,000 to 4,000 TEUs especially will have, which are mostly older, and the order book is quite slim on those categories, will be a challenge. Therefore, the carriers will have to reinvent their networks. Of course, some of the fuels will be changed. Biofuel will become more important in the shipping industry. The question is there enough biofuel, and Even if there is, of course, demand will increase. And when demand will increase, also the cost of biofuel will increase. We have, of course, methanol, et cetera, et cetera. And what does it mean for the shipper? Because I think that who's listening to this is say, okay, all beautiful things, technical stuff. But in reality, what does it mean? This means that carriers will redesign their network, which means that transit time may become longer. Maybe what is today served on a direct port, it may not be served as direct anymore. Maybe some feedering or some outports and relay services will change rotation because of the vessel networks, and which will create, maybe there will not be weekly anymore, maybe bi-weekly. So all this will impact lead time, because that's the whole thing, lead time and possibly reliability of the services. And it's way too soon to envision how this will look. But I think that we will see the impact.
Right. So the lead time impact is definitely going to be, you know, quite a significant impact, I think, for a lot of shippers out there. What about cost? Do you feel that there's going to be some cost impacts as well?
Yes, I always say that, especially in the beginning, sustainability will not come for free. There will be costs. This additional being the additional cost of biofuel, being the fact that these older ships will be scrapped and new ships will be ordered, possibly in some, again, as I said, there are some categories of vessels which are, the order books are very thin.
Right.
Therefore, the charter rates on those vessels, the newer ones, will probably increase. Therefore, likely this will cost more money to the carriers to operate, and they will pass on the cost to the user of the container shipping, like us, and of course the final customer.
Right. Okay. All right. So I know we're getting a little low on time, and you know I always like to get to forward-looking questions here before we end, and. You know, hopefully we can have some more good news from Paolo. So I feel we've gone a little negative here, or doom and gloom a little bit here. But let me ask you this. You know, what does the future hold? So, you know, what can shippers, what can partners, what can everyone kind of look forward to, you know, here in the next year from your perspective?
Well, so I think I'd. Yes, it's not doom and gloom. As I said, it's all this is actually to create the IMO and all the changes in shipping in terms of creating an industry which is much more environmentally sustainable. I think this is all very good news. I think that everyone that is trading on the world oceans will realize that the impact of its activities is becoming by the day more sustainable. And I think that this is great news for the planet, great news for our kids, great news for the next generations. We are definitely not there where we should be and could be, but at least we can see there are major steps forwards being taken. And that's, I think, very good news. When it comes to the pricing, to the cost of container shipping, we have seen that today's pricing level are the highest that I ever seen in 35 years, and everyone that has been in this business will tell you, and they're not just a little bit high, they are by far. On one hand, I believe that there will be some sort of realignment as soon as maybe the demand will not outpace supply the way that that is has happened over the last let's say 18 to 24 months. Mm-hmm. And there may be some sort of realignment. On the other hand, probably there will be a slight adjustment downwards. We've seen already in the last few days here and there on a transactional level. But I also think there would be a different way of contracting, and I think that that's the positive side. I think that if you are a client that has is trading globally and you have a global supply chain, or you depend on a specific, I call it a floating bridge from, say, China to the United States, for example, from China to Europe, from Vietnam to Europe, it doesn't matter, to enter more stable pricing agreements. We have seen today we have so many contracts, 2, 3 year, 4 year contracts with clients at stable pricing. So therefore, client can finally budget. You take out this volatility impact, and so I think that's a good part. Still, the service level and reliability of the whole system is by far not where it should be. And I think that in the next years, that's where a lot of focus will be, because I think that the pricing will not decrease. And I think that everyone has to realize that container shipping is now not cheap. In the past, it was cheap. That's why, I mean, partly we can argue it was also subsidized artificially by the carriers who, in their quest for competing and gaining market share, they lowered the prices and they did not produce any return of investments for the shareholder. This has changed. I don't think that we will see the market to get into a fight for market share by any of these carriers. But again, I can be proven wrong. At the same time, I think that that again, container shipping now is no more what it used to be, and it's no longer cheap. It is a big line item cost in most shippers' balance sheet.
Yep.
And therefore, I think it's the level of investment that everybody has to do, including shippers, including importers, exporters, government, into the whole infrastructure is much greater than it was in the past, because we are paying a lot for bad service. Let's put it very bluntly out there. Therefore, I think we likely will continue to pay quite a lot, but at least we have to make sure that what we get is something good.
Right.
And that's and that is, everyone has to do its part. This is not just blaming a carrier or blaming a 3PL or a shipper. It's a coordinated effort to get this whole system, this whole shipping ecosystem to function better, leverage some technology that is out there. I don't think technology alone will fix it, but technology will be an instrument to fix it together with the people. And then eventually we'll get something good out of it. So I'm positive for the future. I think that I don't believe, again, purely on a cheap pricing that will come back. I think the pricing will stay at a certain level for the service. At the same time, I think also that in the next years, the service levels, the reliability will improve, but it will be very painful, and there will be a lot of hard work by everyone. And that's, I stress everyone, because it is not about one party. Today, we have a huge issue in the United States of containers sitting at the terminals because importer distribution centers cannot unload the containers.
Right.
In many cases, our customers are telling us, we cannot find people to work in our warehouses to unload containers. Therefore, the container sits at the terminal. These containers don't go back to Asia. And then in Asia, you don't have containers, empty equipment to load. And we cannot tell carrier all the time, yeah, just build more equipment. And they are building more equipment. Actually, there have been quite a lot of orders of containers, empty equipment in the past, but you have to get this more efficient. And everybody has to do its part. It's a lot of work.
Yep, it definitely will be. So, you know, you've heard it here first. It's not, there's no magic bullet. It is a lot of work. Partnerships do play a role. And everybody is going to have to pitch in here in order for, you know, for us to all realize some positive changes here, or strides, shall I say, within the end-to-end supply chain network here in the future. Okay, Paolo, one more final question. What's one piece of advice you would offer to our listeners right now based on our conversation today?
Redundancy. That's a magic word. In today's world, it's redundancy. In today's world, it's one of the key things is I think we touched the partnership topic. But when it comes to run a complex, very complex, sophisticated, or less complex, simple supply chain, it does not matter, is to have viable options. Because your number one option will let you down. Your number two option will let you down one day, likely soon, probably also the third.
Right.
So to have redundancy is the key. When I look, and I had this question all the time, when I look at where we performed better with our clients, where our clients that performed better, supply chains that performed better, mm-hmm. are the ones that have been designed from the ground up with a lot of redundancies, with consistent, with planned redundancy, not just transactional redundancy. Oh my God, something went bad to my number one. What do I do to fix the number two? But and when we do this, these supply chains did perform better. They were not trouble free at all. Of course, I will not, but they performed overall better. And we also I like to use a phrase. It's not mine, but that in today's world, and I think this has been like this for years, very often we look at customers competing. In reality, a lot has to do about supply chains competing, because too often producers, manufacturers, the buying, the being raw material, being production countries are more or less the same, but the ones that can envision and deploy and execute better supply chains, it's a key strategic winning role to grow their market share and also customer satisfaction, as well as probably yield. Therefore, it's a key thing to build supply chains which are strong, robust, and to do this is to create and to build redundancy. This is why the first thing that when I discuss with clients is let's really analyze how you get it from point A to point B, what are the requirements, and so on and so forth. Yes, there is a price tag. Redundancy, build redundancies is not cheap. That's number one. But in today's world, what is cheaper is to miss sales because your product, your inventory is not where it should be, or maybe having some good redundancies which allowed you to have your products where they need to be sold. So that's the key question that a shipper, an importer, exporter has to ask itself, and we try to consult them with providing the best quality / price level opportunities that are out there, keeping in mind always to fulfill the best level of reliability, which is probably not what everybody would wish because it is still complicated and it still would not be perfect, but that's the redundancy is the key thing. So I hope I answered your question.
You did. Thank you very much. And I'm sure our listeners will thank you as well. Well, Paolo, thank you so much for coming on to our show today and talking about, you know, the sea freight trade industry and insights. I think it's been rather enlightening here. So thank you again for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and looking forward to the next one, maybe with a nice update and more details on the impact of the new IMO regulations.
Absolutely. I think we'll definitely have a follow-up here. So thank you for tuning in to Kuehne+Nagel's podcast series, Shipping Insights, Sea Freight News, and Supply Chain Solutions. Be sure to follow us online, especially on LinkedIn, and stay tuned for our next episode.